Hey, it's Ronnie Adams, coach on Teen Wolf, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. Unless you're here by mistake and you thought you were listening to something else, and then you can just shut it. I'm seriously, shut it! Stupid, how do you shut this off? Shut it off! Sick of this stupid podcast.
And welcome to None Other Teen Wolf Podcast number 134. Today we're talking about Teen Wolf Season 6, Episode 2, Superposition. As always, I'm Karen, and today I'm once again joined by Natalie. Hi.
Hi. I like that this time you corrected yourself to make sure that you said, as always, you're Karen, as opposed to, as always, you're joined by me, because as always, you are Karen is more of a truth, I feel, than as always, you are joined by Natalie. That's a variable, but I don't know about the day that you'd come on here and not be Karen, so I like that.
That would be a sad day indeed, yeah. I believe. if you'd like to get in contact with us, you can hit us up on Twitter, at NATW Podcast. Email is natwpodcast@gmail.com. Tumblr, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com. And Instagram is NATW Podcast. So today...
May I interject here and also tell you guys that after 4 years of doing this podcast, we have also created a Facebook page which you can like. Not that it's that interesting. I will be posting the episodes there regularly, I suppose. But it's just apparently, you know, having a Facebook page is meant to be important. We've never had one, but now we do. It's like the Twitter. It's a hub with our other podcasts that we're doing under this sort of umbrella. But it's also NATW Podcast, like Facebook/NATW Podcast. So if you want to like that, the more people that like it, the more active it will probably be. So that would be cool because Facebook likes are allegedly important for making something legit in this day and age. Just if you
this
want to.
Is true. Yeah. I suggested doing a Facebook page like 2 years ago and we just literally never got around to it.
I like Twitter. I don't really like Facebook, but
yeah,
let's try. You know, let's give it a go. You know, we can post the episodes there on a more regular basis. And I actually mainly made it because I want to make albums of photos from our different events, like from the times that we've been to Comic-Con and times we've been to set visit and stuff like that. We've had, you know, Instagram, but I was kind of hoping to, like, actually make, like, full albums of, like, our photos from those. So that might be nice.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I'm down for that. So with this episode, we actually remembered to do quotes this time, so yay for us. And honestly, I think both of us have two, so we're kind of making up for last week's. Nat, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I think we should both do our first ones and then both do our second ones.
Okay, I can do that.
Yeah, so my first one, hooray, Coach is back. Lots of familiar faces actually returned in this episode. You know, like I said last week, we are the show is you know, making an effort to add in all of these people who build up this world, even if, you know, it's not necessarily that practical from a production point of view to have recurring characters. The more recurring characters you have, the more you have to pay. I don't know what their budget is, obviously, for season six, but I feel like they're scraping up every little bit of possibility that they have for the final season. And so Coach is back. You know, he's a regular presence in the show over the entire six seasons, and he's here. He, you know, there's some lacrosse stuff going on here, which is kind of all a big metaphor for the alpha, you know, leaving. Point is, Coach is around this episode. He's fantastic. He catches Mason and Corey inside the school doing a little bit of, you know, naughty supernatural work, which we'll get to in a minute. And basically he's like, get out of here, go away. And then he's like, go have lives. Your teenage years are not the time for academic achievement. And Mason said, yes, they are. And Coach says, that is the lie sold to you by the government. And I just love everything about Coach. I just always miss him when he's not there. I think that there's a weird amount of depth to him, which they've had, like, little moments of. Like, a lot of these statements, like this one, you know, it kind of gives me a picture of what kind of person he is, like, how he feels about the world. And it was just hilarious. And he's so, like, vivid when he's there. So I was very excited by this.
Yeah, I just realized that our quotes, like, oddly parallel each other.
Yeah, that's why I said we should do, like, one and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works out really well. Mine was between Coach and Liam, and Liam comes back in to sign up for... to be the captain of the lacrosse team, and Coach is like, what changed? And Liam goes, I held a guy's hand, and Coach just goes, I get it. I totally get it.
This show is so weird.
I love it so much.
And it's just, and it's not played for laughs in the way that, like, it would be in most cases, if you know what I mean. Like, the laugh comes from a totally different place. It's not, like, than it would on paper, if you know what I mean, like, about the, oh, you held a guy's hand. It's just so, it's so good. He's so good.
Even earlier when Coach is like, go gaze.
Yeah. I just love it. I mean, have obviously, you know, the normalized sexuality in the Teen Wolf universe has always been, like, a really big factor of it. But I think, like, having a sports coach, like, having that kind of image of, like, the most, like, you know, encouraging the masculinity and toughness, being, you know, so, you know, go gays is really good image, like, for anyone just casually turning on the television as well. But that's not really why I'm saying it. I'm saying it because he, like, makes me scream with laughter, and I just think he's so great. So yeah, great, so good. Then I had another one which actually made me, like, literally go, oh my god, like, I, like, freaked out loud. I was just like,
whoa. So did I.
I was like, when it happened, I was just like, whoa, okay. Which was, towards the end of the episode, when the, you know, the pack are realizing that they might have all forgotten the same person, like, once they realize that they are forgetting stuff and that they might have forgotten the same person, and so kind of Scott's putting out this theory, Lydia says, you know, they're all contributing to the pile of potential memories. And Lydia says, whoever it is, I think I loved him, which there you go. There's my fan fiction trope that I was talking about last week. It's exactly, this is exactly what I mean. Like, when someone has some sort of amnesia and don't realize that they've been repressing something. So when they have the amnesia without those layers there anymore of, like, conscious why there was something wrong, the truth comes out and there it is. And I can't believe that it's there. So, there's great, great, interesting dichotomy between, like, Malia and Lydia in this episode in regards to their relationship with Styles, which is something I want to talk about more, but just that quote, it happened. There you go. So I screamed out loud, and I don't usually react so like, outwardly, unlike Karen, who screams at everything and has very physical reactions to her viewing experiences.
I do. I got really upset a couple of times during the premiere and during this episode. This part made me gasp, and I was like, oh my god, like, they actually did say that. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. We'll break it down a bit more later too, but my second quote was also from Lydia, and it's after she's written out the word mischief in the shape of the word Styles. And I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming, but did still you? When she says, what the hell is a Styles?
How did you know it was coming?
No. You just knew. Because I just knew, like, of course she would say that. Like, it's such a throwback. It's such a parallel. I just knew it was coming. But when she said, what the hell is a Styles, I just lost it. And I was like, yeah, this is going to be great. Terrible, but great.
Yeah. Oh, so much there. There's so much in this episode that I really, really liked. So I'm very excited. Like, the first episode was like, okay, but as I said, I was kind of like, we've seen so much of it. We knew what the twist was going to be. We knew all of those things going in. And they aired so much. They spoiled so much of what was going to happen. And I think what you said, you know, that the reason that they did that was because there's so much more to come that we're not, have not prepared for. I think that's going to be true, because I was just like, first episode, I was like, okay. And this episode, I was like, whoa, stop about quite a lot of things. So yeah, it was like,
yeah.
And I think everyone's, this is probably going to be something we talk about with the different characters, but I think everyone's like bringing their freaking A game in terms of like acting, yes, and delivery and stuff. Yes. Like Parrish, I think Orny, like, as you know, Coach, Parrish.
Shelley.
Yeah, Shelley is unbelievable. But everyone's bringing, like a notch up in their... not that they were bad before, but there's, like, every moment is, like, perfect. Like, they're really... yeah, I don't know. I think everyone... There's no time for, like, no moment for time for anything to be less than, like, the best it's ever been. And I think that that's kind of exciting.
Exactly. Yeah, we both really liked this episode, which I actually want to like talk about at the end after we've discussed everything, because I have some things to say and discuss about like the overall tone and what this season feels like already. So I'll be interested to jump into that. But getting into the particulars of the episode, the first thing I want to do is just talk about the Ghost Riders really quick, because we see a bit more of their faces in this episode, and they really look like mummies to me. And I'm still trying to figure out like their origins and how they could have become Ghost Riders, if they've always been Ghost Riders or if they once human and now they're like desiccated people. But they just look like mummies to me.
That kind of shrunken, like, look over the face does remind me of something. I can't, like, a shrunken head kind of, like, dehydrated, you know, like, situation. I don't know.
It reminds me of the guy from Hocus Pocus.
Oh, God.
That comes out of the grave.
Why do people all love Hocus Pocus so much?
Because it's an amazing movie.
No, you know what's a better movie about witches? Practical Magic. Thank you very much. Practical Magic is 5,000 better times than Hocus Pocus. The only thing that Hocus Pocus has ever in any way achieved is an awkward conversation in which I had to tell my young brother what a virgin was. and I don't like that movie, and I don't understand why it's like the premium Halloween movie for America. Like, I don't understand why people love it so much. Practical Magic is what I watch on Halloween, FYI. So anyway, moving on. Sorry, Leo's just asking me if she can use the rest of the mushrooms, and that's a very, you know, that could get rough, so just give me a second.
Hi, Leo.
All right, we'll carry on with that later. She can use the mushrooms. So the look of them really does remind me of something, but I can't place it. Like some sort of like gross, like supernatural or like a kind of mystical image. I don't know if it's a mummy. It's something weird. The kind of the stretched, like, it certainly looks like something's been like kind of, yeah, like, unnaturally preserved, you know, I guess is the word for it. But so were the Dread Doctors, but they look different to that.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I'm still getting, like, Dementor / mummy vibes from them, and that's really the only thing that I can think of at the moment.
Yeah.
Moving forward into, like, starting to get into the plot of this episode, Scott and Liam are on the lacrosse field, and Scott tells Liam, your back shots suck, and Liam sort of proves him wrong pretty quickly, and Scott says, must have been thinking of someone else, and I found this really interesting, that yes, people are being erased, but that doesn't mean that there isn't something weird sort of niggling the back of these people's minds, and the fact that Scott thought it was Liam but was actually thinking about Styles is very interesting, and I don't know if it's because Styles hasn't been like 100% erased yet, or if because Styles has had such a huge impact on his life that it's really hard for him to forget about him completely.
Well, what's interesting to me about this, and it stood out straight away, is that, and there are some major things that were different, which we'll get to, but mostly nothing about their lives is different. And so they've had to mentally fill in the gaps as to why that would be, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. Scott's still a werewolf, which is obviously a big part of the episode later where he kind of learns that Styles existed because he's thinking about that situation. Scott is still a werewolf, and realistically, if Styles had never existed, Scott would not be a werewolf because that wouldn't have happened, you know?
Right.
So, all of these other aspects, so, you know, like Malia later on, like all of these different things... Styles was there. All of the things that happened in their lives still happened. The events didn't happen that got them to that place, you know? And so they're having to kind of mentally fill in, or, you know, like subconsciously create reasons. Like, why is Scott standing on that lacrosse field right now? You know, why is he the captain of lacrosse? Like, every aspect of their lives, basically. They're having to kind of... make up reasons for and fill in, like, oh, that must be you, like, that must have been because of that. And that was kind of interesting to me, because I did wonder whether it was going to literally be an alternate universe, like Buffy, like we did on Rewatchable, the universe in which Buffy had never come to Sunnydale, you know, and everything is crap, you know. I wondered if it was going to be like that, like if it was going to be situation in which the effects of Styles never having existed would follow through to, like, everyone's completely different in their lives. You know, Lydia and Scott aren't friends. You know, mm-hmm. Scott's not a werewolf. Like, you know, everyone's died because of, I don't know, Peter or, you know, one of the other big bads or, like, whatever. But no, it's not that at all. It's the opposite. It's that everything is still the same. It's just that Styles... didn't exist, so they're having to kind of subconsciously find excuses for the things that he was responsible for, which I found interesting, and that's what I think is going on with, you know, Scott and Liam, obviously.
Right, yeah. It is interesting to think that they could have taken this in a completely different direction, like the Buffy direction, and how different the show would have been. Like, that would have been really cool to see, but only for an episode, because I think that would get really old really fast. It would feel like a rehash if they had to carry that idea throughout the season. So I think it was obviously much smarter for them to just be like, okay, they don't necessarily change reality. Of course... we'll talk about some stuff later on, but they don't necessarily change reality. It's just you forget the reason why these things happen, and there's this hole that you are aware of, but you can't explain. And as we get into, like, each character's reactions to noticing that hole, we'll talk about it a little bit more. But before that happens, Mason is helping Corey with his physics lab because Corey's failing. Mason has a 4.9 GPA because he's a genius. I mean, at one point I had over a 4.0, but I don't know, like, how high they can go.
Karen's a genius too.
No, not really. That was only in high school, so it's not like I was crazy genius or anything. But... they do this physics lab where they make this, like, magnetic goo. And what ends up happening is the lights go out and the magnetic properties of the goo end up being super strong. And I thought this was really interesting because they don't necessarily explain why.
Yeah.
My initial thinking was it was from the storm, because the Ghost Riders come into the school. They are a part of the storm. They, you know, do... have an influence on the weather. So the fact that if they're related to, like, lightning, for instance, the fact that the lights go out and the fact that the magnetic properties of the goo get stronger makes sense scientifically in terms of the weather going crazy. But at the same time, Kristen, my roommate and another hypo writer, she was watching it with me. She thought that maybe it was Styles doing something with this, which I thought was a really interesting theory, because if he's potentially, like, in another reality, does he have the ability to affect this reality, this dimension? And if so, is he trying to, like, help them figure out what's going on?
I have no idea. We obviously don't know much about where he is, like where he's being taken or being held. It's obviously something we're going to find out as we've had those shots in the trailer of, you know, him with the others who have been taken in wherever it is they are. But, I mean, he'd certainly be trying if he could to get back. I just don't know how this would tie into it. The magnetic thing certainly has not been explained. I mean, even just the base lab, I was just like, what the hell is this? Is this a real thing? I want to make crazy goo. But yeah, I don't know. It was really weird. Again, I was like, what? When all of the scissors and stuff started flying. So
yeah. I'm pretty sure that is a real thing, by the way.
Okay.
But it's interesting to see how the writers affect the world as they come in, because obviously they're invisible to most people. But when they show up, the clock, the second hand on the clock also sort of went back and forth and then stopped. And I just, like, do they affect time? Do they appear and disappear within a moment's notice? Or,
well, and we're talking about this. Compasses are magnetic too, like the magnetic fields of the Earth, obviously, and that they affected that. So they may be literally, this may be something to do with literally the, you know, the warping of reality, that it's changing the magnetic fields of the Earth. So I don't know how clocks work. Probably not a magnet, but I feel like that, yeah, it could all be connected. I don't know. I said when we saw the trailer, not just the trailer, even the virtual reality at Comic-Con, that something about the way that they work, and we haven't seen too much of it yet, but we've seen it in the virtual reality. To me, it felt quite scientific, like it felt like a kind of glitch in the Matrix type, like a technology-based thing almost. And obviously they're not like super sci-fi technology aliens or something like that, but there's still something about it that feels very science-y, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, and I think it's just the fact that they're connected to weather and to nature and the way that works as a science. I mean, with the clocks, if they're battery operated and if they literally short circuit them or something, like that could have caused the clock to stop or to glitch. But again, I don't know if it is just based in science or if they're actually warping reality. And we do know that they, in a way, do change reality, obviously, because they're erasing people. But what all does that extend to? And it's, we have so many questions right now and not enough puzzle pieces to put together an answer, which I find really exciting and challenging, but also we're going to be asking a lot of questions that we just can't answer at this point.
I do feel like it has to be watched quite closely, and yeah, I have no idea what is meant to be significant at the moment, and I don't know enough about science. It's really good that, like, some of the kids in this show are really good at science and can explain these things to me that I don't understand, because, yeah.
Yeah, thank God for Mason. But kind of, I'm going to go out on a limb and say one of the MVPs of this episode was actually Corey, believe it or not, because, oh my God, he's actually more useful now, which is a
really
complaint.
Interesting.
Yeah, because this is a complaint that we had in season 5, the fact that his invisibility powers are, like, cool and all, but he doesn't do anything, except now we know that when he goes invisible, he can see the Ghost Riders.
And this is the person that they were talking about at Comic-Con. It has to be, because you know how we were all like, oh, Lydia, like, Jeff was like, someone in the pack will have powers that are really relevant to this circumstance, and then it's going to be able to combat the Ghost Riders more than usual. Maybe it still could be to do with Lydia and her powers, but I think it's meant to be Corey. Like, this unexpected power thing is really, really interesting. So they have that obviously that green vision, which is kind of the sign of, you know, when he's his invisibility vision and he can take people into that with him. And they see the student, like, hanging from the whip, like, with the that's a really, really horrible image, by the way. Like, it was, like, the imagery of that was, like, sick. I was just like, this is, like, too much.
Especially when you can't see the Ghost Riders at first and he's just hanging there for no reason.
Worse with the whips, actually. Like maybe it's six of one, half dozen of the other, but with the whips, like, with the, like, just pulling, like, on his neck and, like, being, it was not good.
It was just bad from start to finish, but it was really shocking seeing him hanging there for no reason. And then you go into the invisibility world and you see them and you're like, oh my God, that's why that's happening. It was kind of shocking.
Yeah. It was really, really, anyway, they see that happen. And we don't really know why he was a target. Like, if he just happened to be someone that got in the way and was their next target, like, is there any rhyme or reason to who they're taking? Is it, like, people who could be a threat to them, or is it literally just who happens to come across them? You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would kind of like to think maybe he was in the background somewhere and he saw or heard something that made him a target, but we don't know why exactly they're going after who they're going after, if these people are significant for some reason, or if it's just like, well, we need X number of souls, this person looks like a good person to take with us, and then they just do it. Really don't know their motives yet.
Yeah. What I loved about this situation was the conversation between Liam and Corey and Mason after that. Like, when they had their little throwdown about that, which I can't remember. It threaded throughout the episode, but it sort of started when they talked about this. Because, as we'll go into a bit more, we have been talking about, like, is Corey meant to be this useless? Like, is he meant to be this questionable and, like, he didn't even do anything, and yet, like, Mason's like, I love you, Corey, and, like, you know, he stood there doing nothing when the beast was happening, and we were like, do they know that this looks really bad? Guys, they totally know. Like, we should have not doubted that, because this was, like, Corey was one of my biggest question marks for, like, and God, I'm so sorry to anyone listening this who's associated with my show, but Corey's portrayal was one of my biggest question marks with the quality of the show, if that makes sense. Like, whether, like, have they missed a thing here? Because, like, are we meant to care about him? Because he sucks. They totally know and have totally addressed it throughout this episode. Liam, you know, calling it out and stuff like that. So that's something that I was thrilled by, like, actually, to see that. Yes, it's totally acknowledged that it's, like, kind of super dodgy what's been going on. And I have some more thoughts about Liam in that regards when we get to his part, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But before then, I want to talk about Malia a little bit, because like we were saying at the top of the episode, like, I think Shelley did I think they're all doing a fantastic job. Holland, everybody, Posey, but I've always really enjoyed Shelley's portrayal of Malia and the way that she can be very, you know, straight-faced, dry humor and stuff, but also you can read every minute thought in her eyes, and I think she did a really good job with that this episode. She hooks up with this guy, and at first I was like,
whoa!
Who the F is this? And then I remembered that we actually reported on this a little while ago. This was, like, back in May. I believe this is Ross Butler, who's going to be in Riverdale, and he's going to be playing Nathan, and they just said he's a sexy new member of the Beacon Hills lacrosse team who doesn't believe in the supernatural, but that's about to change. Which is pretty interesting, but I love that, again, like, they don't explain it. They don't feel like they need that exposition. It's just, it is what it is. You can infer what is happening by, you know, seeing what's going on in the scene, and we don't necessarily know if they've been hooking up for a while or what, but it's just, he's just there. But I love the little throwbacks, like Malia wanting to be the big spoon. Mm. And, like, Styles ended up getting really comfortable with it really quickly, but this guy's like, I'm not so sure about this.
I love this. I bet people are going to hate this. Can I just say? I mean, maybe they won't. Maybe they will. Because at first it's like, whoa, that is gratuitous. Like, that is the most graphic sex scene they've ever had on the show. Like, the angle and, like, the implication. It's not, like, all sweet and sensuous. It is, like, right there. But I love it because it's so right for her. Because she's so, like, she doesn't give a fuck. Like, you know, like, she's so shameless. And I don't think that's a bad thing. She just wants,
not at all.
She just wants what she wants, and it's fine. Like, and she's totally fine with that, and it doesn't, you know, impact anything else in her life. And I really, really love that about her, and it's so right for her. Like, if it was another character, it maybe would feel a bit weirder, but for her, it just seems perfect. And it's not, like, slutty or anything like that. It's just healthily shameless. Maybe a little odd on someone so young, but it's someone who's already had the experience of, like, the complete lack of shame of being an animal. You know, like, it's like, that kind of mindset, and I really love that for her. I thought it was really good. And obviously the big spoon thing is, yeah.
really funny.
And this is kind of interesting to me that her ongoing story in this episode, you know, is to do with missing styles, and the first throwback to it is this, the kind of the big spoon thing, and, you know, oh, why isn't this normal? You know, like, why isn't this person doing the thing that I need to do? And then, you know, the throwback to her little highlighting trick that they shared with the colors, her manic highlighting is still a thing, which is adorable.
Oh my God. And which is so funny because that part killed me for some reason. When she pauses and she highlights the word style in red, you don't need to explain it. We know what red means for her and for styles. We know her habits with the highlighters. We know what that's in reference to. And I feel like some other shows, and perhaps maybe even Teen Wolf in the past, would have said something about that, but they're not. They trust their audience to understand all these little hints that they're putting down, and I really appreciate it. This is something I'll talk about later on. I really appreciate the lack of dialogue in this episode because they don't need to have a discussion. It's understood. Some cases, you know, you have to pass information from one character to another, but in other cases, they just show it and the audience will pick it up, will understand what it is. And the fact that she did that was just, it was
so great. And
it was awful. And but it hurts, like, it hurts, it really does.
It's really interesting to me, like, to think about, like, what styles might mean to her, or what her relationship with styles meant to her, and what that means versus being boyfriend or girlfriend or together. Because I feel like she maybe doesn't, I feel like maybe it's not a big deal that they're not together because those kind of things don't mean the same thing to her, if you know what I mean. Like, style still clearly means the same thing to her as he would have, you know, regardless of whether they were dating or not. Like, and you go into that with her issues that she's experienced is that she's losing her control on humanity, that she has her little den in the corner of the room with the coyote, like, pile of clothes. And at first I was like, oh my God, is this literally how she lives all the time? I'm dying because she's so cute. But it's not normal. It's actually not normal. It's a reversion, a regression. And she's having, you know, trouble with the control, and she's having, you know, she's trying to chain herself up and trying to remember what happened in all of those situations where she chained herself up. So Styles is still her anchor for humanity. Styles is still her person, if you know what I mean, that helps her and teaches her and all of that stuff that he always was, except they're not together, and it's very clear that Styles and Lydia are in love. So do you think that connection, do you think that the connection between Styles and Malia was ever, in the most human sense of the word, romantic, if you know what I mean? Because it, to me, it seems like it maybe wasn't. Like, it was like partnership, at times sexual, and it was, you know, a bond, you know, that they shared, where they, you know, had this aspect of her sort of supernatural involved. But was it ever like we are in love? Because I feel like that their relationship is or could be exactly the same now as it wasn't, as it was before, with the removal of the sexual aspect, which for her maybe doesn't necessarily mean anything romantic, if you know what I mean. I hope that all made sense.
It does. It actually really does. And that's a really good question. I do think that it was romantic. I don't think that they were in love. I think that they, like you said, clearly had a strong bond. They were obviously having sex. So I think it was deeper than just a friendship, but it was also in no way as deep as it is between Styles and Lydia. So I think that even though they were together and they clearly had feelings for each other, one, that doesn't mean that they can't be friends afterwards. And two, that doesn't mean that that bond isn't also sort of a platonic bond as well, because I really see them being very close in the future, even if they aren't romantically involved. And I think that it is because Styles is Malia's anchor. I don't think that's directly tied to her having sex with him. I think it's tied to the fact that they have an understanding of each other. Yeah. And whether or not that's, you know, romantic or platonic, it kind of doesn't matter. It's just fact that he helps calm her down.
Yeah, and I feel like it's kind of at the place where it wouldn't necessarily, you know, if he was with someone else, it wouldn't necessarily be like a jealousy thing or anything mm-hmm. like that. To me, it kind of feels like it could be like, say that he does survive and that everything is fine and that he, you know, gets together with Lydia. I feel like that it could very much be, you know, oh, you know, you're still my person in that kind of, in that way, but we're not going to have sex because my human feelings know that sex, you know, in this circumstance, you know, is monogamous with the person that I'm in love with or dating, and that's not you. And Millie had been like, okay, I guess everything else is still the same, you know, like whatever. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that because I think for her probably sex doesn't necessarily mean the same thing as it does to someone like Styles. And that doesn't mean right. it was like bad for them to be having sex, but I think that it's like, it makes the potential, like the, whether it's romantic or whether it's not, like a lot easier or a lot like less, you know, petty or like jealousy or anything like that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I also really like Malia and Lydia's friendship and the mm-hmm. idea that there is no jealousy there, like, makes me really excited because I think that those two are also good for each other.
Yeah. I really did like Kira. I really do and did. However, the foursome of, in the first episode, of Styles, Malia, Lydia, and Scott as, like, a four feels really good, if you know what I mean. Like, I feel like I'm not necessarily missing Kira as much as I would. It's obviously not really, you know, romantic, like, pairings, like, you know, Allison and Scott and Styles and Lydia. But there's something about those four together that, maybe it's just because they've been through so much at this point, but I really like them as a unit. So I hope they all get to survive.
Yeah, let's hope. Moving forward into this next point, which I also really liked, it's kind of a B-plot almost, a tangent to the main plot in this episode, is that Scott gives up his position as captain to focus on school and graduating, which, hooray for him. I mean, I think that's really great and doesn't surprise me, doesn't feel, you know, out of character or anything like that, because he really wants to focus on his studies and make sure that he can get into a good college and everything. So Coach is trying to find a new captain. He's not too happy with Scott deciding not to be captain, but he is trying to find a new one. And Scott is encouraging Liam to become captain. And they have this conversation in the locker room that I absolutely adored, because they were talking about Liam stepping up to be captain, but actually they were talking about Liam stepping up and becoming alpha.
Yeah, it was not very subtle, was it?
Not really, but I kind of enjoyed that it wasn't subtle.
I like that they're still so hung up on playing lacrosse, like that it matters so much to them. Like, even if they are really talking about being alpha, like the fact that they're putting that much effort into playing lacrosse is hilarious to me at this point.
Yeah. Did this scene feel like a Derek Scott moment from earlier in the series?
Yeah, I mean, kind of, yeah.
I just got this really big vibe of, like, I just had a flashback to Derek stepping into the locker room. Granted, he was a little bit creepier back in the day than Scott is now, but Derek stepping into the locker room and having a chat with Scott and telling him, you know, you need to step up, you need to learn how to control these powers and everything. And the conversation is different between Scott and Liam, but I like the idea that Liam's like, I don't know if I can lead. I don't know if I should lead. And Scott is just like, look, leaders don't run. Like, leaders step up to the plate even if they're not sure that they can do it. And Scott's had a lot of experience with that. And not that Derek left him high and dry or anything like that, but Scott was sort of forced into a position of leadership because he was truly the best option. And that was tough for him, and I think it's still tough for him, especially if you think back to season 5 when he lost his pack and had to build it back up again. But now he and his team are stronger than ever, and I think Liam just has cold feet at this point. But it's, we were talking last week about, you know, whether we can see Liam as an alpha, and I still think he has a long way to go. But even in this episode, by the end, when he has that funny moment with Coach, was like, oh, I held a guy's hand and kind of figured everything out, it felt like the right step forward in this direction, and I can really feel myself getting on board with the idea later on.
Of Liam?
Yeah.
I mean, I hope so. I feel like it's where they're going to make it happen, like, you know, one way or the other. They're going to have to make us believe it, because I feel like that's what's going to happen. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how we go. People really don't seem to like him very much, like Coach and, like, other players and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's an interesting dynamic with Liam right now, and we'll get to that later, because there were a couple of moments where I was like, wow. Like, Liam is jealous, and he's still very immature, which is also something I talked about last week. But it was interesting to see him reacting and interacting with some people in this episode in particular. First, though, I want to talk about Lydia, because she keeps having more visions, and she keeps hearing a train.
Yeah.
Okay, she ends up seeing a doctor in her classroom, and when she goes and follows the woman, she experiences the night that Styles was taken. She doesn't see Styles, but she hears the conversation. She's kind of pulled along like she was that night, and ends up coming out of it and almost getting hit by a car. Malia saves her, thank goodness, but that was a very strong indication that it wasn't just about, oh, I feel like there's this absence. Like, this is, something's missing and something is wrong, and here's like the biggest clue I can possibly present you. So who do you think that woman was, and why do you think she triggered this vision?
I think she's another banshee.
That was my thought too.
Maybe a banshee who's already been taken, or it could just be another banshee who has better powers, or a dead banshee or something like that. I think this is like banshee radio though.
Yeah, and we do see the woman, like, open her mouth like she's screaming, would make sense.
I think that they're going to have more learning about how Lydia can, like, you know, how banshees actually work, like, with each other, how they can send messages, like, from beyond or whatever. So I think this is either a normal banshee, a dead banshee, or a banshee who's been taken and can project back into this world in some way.
Yeah. Holland did say something about, like, not necessarily traveling through time, but talking or interacting with or getting visions from banshees from other time periods. So, like, I automatically sort of assumed that this was somebody who maybe has died, and this is their way of communicating. But also, like, the thought did occur to me that she had been taken, and maybe she's trying to give Lydia a clue, because I sort of for another reason, ended up rewatching the trailer for the season and realized that it looks like Styles and the others are in a train station when they're, like, in this limbo or wherever the Ghost Riders have taken them. And that plays directly into the idea that Lydia keeps hearing a train.
That's, okay, that's interesting. I didn't know if it was a train station. I didn't see it that closely. Is it like
just the general aesthetic of like the pillars and the lights and the benches? I mean, I don't know for sure, but like that was something that Kristen also brought up, and I was like, oh, yeah, actually,
like a holding
that
station
would make a lot of sense. Yeah, kind of like King's Cross Station in Harry Potter, in between limbo area.
I don't know. The train is of now a mystery to me. But this, I need to know more about how these banshees network with each other or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be a really interesting theme to see play out across the season, or at least the first half of the season. Because I'm always interested in how Lydia's powers work. They're still so mysterious, even though we've had them around for so long now.
Yeah.
I can tell you, though, that one character I'm actually really upset with right now is Mrs. Martin, because she convinced the kids who saw the beast in the library that the beast was just a bear and that Scott's fangs were just a hallucination, and I'm so mad at her because I feel like she's being extremely irresponsible and she's blocking the kids from figuring out this mystery at every turn. And I know she's just trying to keep them safe, but like, she's not going to. Like, these kids save the town on the reg, and if you're standing in their way, then you're part of the problem.
So now, basically, I found the line about the bear hilarious, but your point is good in that, so now all of those kids, like, it's not going to be known that Scott's a werewolf. Like, it's like that, I guess they've like swept that under the rug, like that they're not going to be addressing the fact that everyone at Beacon Hills knows. You're just sad that they're not going to raise him up and sing to him, aren't you, Karen?
I mean, a little bit. Like, I was really hoping that would play out in this season. I can live with the fact that it's not, because I think they have to keep a little bit of like that on like locked down, but I'm mostly upset in just Mrs. Martin's attitude.
Yeah, the fact that she's, you know, trying to be like, you know, I thought we agreed that this was a safe space where we don't talk about this. Like, you know, it is a bit of a strange, like, you know, tactic to take when you know that the things are true and you know that, like, what else do you just want to like let it happen and just like, you know, that's it? Like, I don't really understand.
She's just burying her head in the sand, and I think it's ignorant the way that she's going about this.
Yeah, I feel like she, you know, like to Lydia, she'd be like, have you, maybe they have had this in the show, and I literally cannot remember, but what it reminds me of is like, you know, well, have you tried not being a banshee? You know, like that kind of like, oh, you know, that kind of attitude of like, have you tried not being a werewolf or something like that? And that kind of parallel that, yeah, I don't know. It's not that productive. And yes, she is certainly trying to, like, on one hand, like, keep them just having a normal life. But, like, what's going to happen, like, when bodies start dropping and literally no one else can do anything?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Whatever. Hopefully that is an arc that they continue to explore and improve. Like, I'm okay if this is where she starts, if by the end she ends up being helpful in understanding, you know, what they can do for this town. That, yes, they're teenagers, but they also have these supernatural abilities that can help save lives.
Yeah. It's not great that they're the only ones that can, you know, do it. It would be great if it was a bunch of, like, you know, policemen or something that had the supernatural powers, but unfortunately that's not true.
Yeah. Oh, well. I want to jump back to Liam quickly, because we did talk about this a little bit, but you have an interesting point that I want you to talk about. But Liam doesn't trust Corey. And they, like we said, they call him out on his invisibility powers being kind of useless. And Corey kind of argues with Mason.
Yeah, not just the powers. They call out his personality traits being terrible.
Yeah.
Which I loved. I was like, I was just like, oh, thank God they're actually aware of this. You know, they call out the fact that he was loyal to Theo for so long, and all of those things. I mean, not that Theo is the biggest problem. Like, I didn't even really think about Theo in the grand scheme of things. I just thought about the fact that Corey was so willing to not stand up, I guess, for, like, what, you know, not fight back. Like, that he wasn't willing to die for the right reason, you know, right thing. He was just kind of scared and saving his own skin. And maybe lots of people would do the same in that circumstance. I don't know. But they certainly really go to town on him, like, all of the things that have made him kind of questionable. So I was very excited.
Even Mason kind of has a line about it, and you can tell that he feels a little guilty saying it, but it's also kind of true. So, like, what are you going to do? But Leah or Corey says to Mason, "Your friends aren't my friends," and Mason can't really accept that. And there's definitely this beef between Liam and Corey. And you brought up an interesting point, and I kind of want you to talk about it a little bit more.
My first sense, like, when they're on the lacrosse field at the beginning and Liam is like, "Something's happening to Mason," and he, like, runs off, if you know what I mean. Like, he has Mason's sixth sense and something like that.
Yeah.
And then he finds him, and then he has that kind of throwdown in the library when they see the guy, and, you know, Liam and Mason and Corey are telling Scott and Liam what happened. He's like, "You brought him into this," like, to Corey about Mason. And it's so protective and so intense. And then, you know, throughout the episode, we do discover that, like, yes, okay, it's like they have beef because of Corey's background, the fact that Corey, you know, was just, like, standing around not helping, like, when they were hunting Sebastian and, you know, when they were trying to save Mason from the beast. And even the fact that he was, like, listening in on their conversation and stuff like that. Like, Corey is continuing to be kind of gross, even though he has these power that can now potentially help them. That, and, you know, Liam and Corey do then have their hand-holding and bonding moment, which perhaps the beef is buried now. But for the first half of this episode, I was, like, pretty convinced that the end of this season was going to be Mason and Liam getting together. Like, that this was going to be the end. And this is why Hayden and Liam might end and stuff like that, that we would have one of those, like, previously assumed straight, "Oh, actually, I am really into my best friend. My possessiveness about him does mean that." Because his the way he goes at Corey, like, when he, like, first finds him in the library, I was just like, whoa, okay. That's, like, intense. And
it was intense.
So intense. I was, and it was quite, it quite shocked me. So yeah. But the, you know, I don't know if that kind of arc is now meant to be done, if you know what I mean. Like, if the hand-holding moment, not in a romantic fashion, was meant to be kind of the, okay, Corey is now on the team and everything is better, or not. But yeah. I was really glad that they did go into so viciously how terrible he has been.
Yeah, it's really nice because that is something that we obviously noticed. And, like, to be honest, like, for anybody that's been listening to us for a while, we don't complain about too much. Like, we really love this show and we really take it, like, take what it gives us. But Corey was always something that we were kind of like, okay, but what else? Like, what is really going on here? And the fact that they addressed that, I think, was just really great. Yeah. So, and the idea that he has more to do now and that he's an integral part of figuring out the mystery of the Ghost Riders makes me really excited about his character.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is not something I thought I'd say.
No, it just goes to show they can keep tricking us into it. We definitely don't sit here trying to pick apart problems with the show every week, but, you know, Corey definitely was something both of us could not help being like, what the hell is wrong with this guy? So, that's clearly not unnoticed, you know, that's clearly a plan of some sort. So that's really, really good. And yeah, so this power that he has means that he can see things in, he can see things in the happening with the Ghost Riders world, and then when he interacts with them, he can bring them back to the real world, which we'll go into a bit more when, you know, Liam holds his hand and gets a new look at life.
Yeah. But speaking about characters maybe one of us has a problem with, what did you think of seeing D in this episode?
I like how his advice is just like, take a nap.
Yes.
Shouldn't we all take a nap, really? Like,
seriously. Solve so many problems.
It was such, sorry, but again, it was such use. Like, really, it wasn't even like, I've got some herbs to put you in, like, a magic sleep or anything like that, like, to, you know, bring, you know, about some, like, lucid dreaming. No, it was just literally, like, go to sleep.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe I'm being too harsh, but it was, you know, it did apparently work, but I was still like...
It did.
Okay, then. Is this the first night that they've had, you know, would have this just happened if Scott had gone to sleep anyway, you know? Like, is this the first day they've had without Styles?
He disappeared the previous night, so, yeah, this is, like, the first full day. And I think maybe just pointing out the fact that, like, he's realizing something is wrong now, like, and so that brings it to the surface a little bit more, that maybe going and taking a nap, like, allows it to come forth even more. And I really enjoyed the scene. I mean, Deaton aside, like, I don't really have a problem with Deaton, but... he talks about phantom limb syndrome and the fact that they're comparing Styles to Scott like that, I think is just, it works really well because they're so close and they're such good friends and they've been through so much that it just completely makes sense to me. But Scott's subconscious is trying to figure out what's missing. And so he does go take a nap and he wakes up in the forest and he brings Malia, was it Malia and Lydia?
Both of them, I think.
He brings
out there.
He brings them out there, and he remembers back in season one, and we get clips from season one, which was really cool. He remembers looking for a dead body, but as he runs through the scenario in his head, he knows that it doesn't make sense for him to have been out there alone, and he picks holes.
Yeah,
he picks holes in the whole thing. He's like, how did I get out there? I didn't have a car, and why would I be out there on my own? And I couldn't have run there because I had asthma, and why was the sheriff looking for me, and all this stuff. And it was so well written and plotted out that I, like, it blew my mind that he was just like, no, something is wrong here because this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it was like they really covered like every loophole, you know, like kind of thing. And, you know, they hit every point as to like why it didn't make sense and why it couldn't just be explained away. Like once you start thinking about it, why it couldn't be explained away. And it was, you know, so he kind of figures that there was someone there with him who's now not there. And then that's the moment that everyone kind of starts being like, I think that I have the same problem.
Exactly. And this basically tells us that Styles is the linchpin in their lives. Like, nobody can fill the hole that's been left by his absence. And we knew going into the season that Styles wouldn't be in a huge part of the season for obvious reasons with Dylan O'Brien's scheduling and everything, but we knew that the season was still going to be all about him. And I think that they set it up so well that it's like, if you take away this person and nothing changes, you know, like the Buffy reality kind of thing, if nothing changes, but you take this person away, he's so integral to their lives for so many different reasons and on so many different levels that it's like they immediately notice that something's off. It's the next day and they're like, yeah, we're missing something here.
Like, what would it be like if I didn't have Karen in my phone? And I was like, what's wrong?
No, nothing would change.
No, that's not true.
It would be fine.
No, that's not true. But, yeah, it's... You know, they do kind of pick up on it pretty quickly. You know, Malia has her, you know, her lack of control and her chains and all of that kind of thing. And Scott has this. And then, obviously, the big thing is Lydia as well, like, just openly being like, I think that I loved him, which is, as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, really interesting that she would just, like, come out and say that, like, in front of everyone, because clearly she's not... She doesn't have enough memories to realize why she might not have admitted that before, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
She's, right now, she's probably like, oh, yeah, he was my boyfriend, right? Or something like that. Like, not like that, but not that facetious. But it's exactly the thing I was trying to describe last week with the fan fiction, which I'm totally fine with. I actually love it. But this is exactly what I meant. The as soon as you remove the hang-ups that might have come with, like, an entire lifetime of kind of, oh, that's awkward, and, oh, he dated her, and, oh, he had a weird crush on me, and it wasn't real, and then, like, all of that. As soon as all of that goes, and you're just, like, thinking about how that person makes you feel without any context of, like, the surface stuff, and this is what she says. So that was...
Yeah, and I think this is gonna work well for some fans who... don't hate Stydia, but might not realize the connection the way that other fans have. And I think it's going to allow the show to explore those feelings in retrospect mm-hmm. in a way that's going to get some people on board with this relationship, which is really a smart way to go about it because everybody has their preferences. And especially on this show, like, shipping is so big and you kind of, like, they all work really well together. But this is going to allow the show to walk down that path of Styles and Lydia and remind everybody, okay, this is what they went through. This is how this person actually felt during this moment and what they mean to each other. So I'm actually really looking forward to that.
Yeah. It's, I'm very curious to see how people will react to this, but, and how Styles, when Styles comes back, like, what they're gonna, if Styles comes back. I feel like he has to, because I feel like they couldn't be, like, hammering home this Styles and Lydia thing so much if it was not gonna have some semblance of a
right?
happy ending. Like, they weren't gonna be like, oh, they've realized they loved each other, and then, like, he never comes back. Like, tragedy the end. I feel like they have to have a little bit more than that, though. I don't know if we've had any news about Dylan O'Brien's whereabouts or his filming of the current season, like the second half of season six, but it may literally be, even if he is on set, that they don't want to, like, spoil the outcome of season one, so they're not, like, you know, posting any pictures or whatever.
Yeah.
No, not season one, of the first half of the season. Ah, I don't know. It's crazy. Yeah, but I can't wait to see how, you know, she kind of reacts to remembering him when she does.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty cool, I think. Mm. I'm on board. I'm excited.
Mm.
Jumping back to Liam, Liam and Corey... or at least Corey steps forward, actually, which, again, like, MVP, like, he's being very proactive and direct about this, which is usually not how he does things, so I really appreciated that side of him in this episode. But they decide that they should work together for Mason's sake, and they, like, totally figure everything out, or at least a huge part of the puzzle, because they jump into the invisibility world. Like, we gotta come up with a better name for this. And they see the school ID card, and it's blank, but Liam thinks to go swipe it and start remembering, like, what's going on with this. And that's when Mason sort of fills it in. Like, to see something is to change its very existence. It goes back to Schrodinger's cat. And seeing the card made it real. So they were able to remember Jake, the kid that was taken.
Mm.
And the whole card comes back into existence. Like, the picture reappears, his name is on it, and they actually remember him now, and they remember that he was, like, Liam has Spanish with him, they were in the physics lab together, and now he's disappeared.
Like, as soon as they know that who they're trying to remember, as soon as they remember, they see the person, they're like, oh, yeah, totally. Like, and it all comes back. So is that kind of, is it, he hasn't come back. The guy himself hasn't come back, presumably.
Right.
But they remember, like, you know, it's kind of like, you know, looking at something out of the corner of your eye and then actually looking at it. It's like when you turn around and actually look at it, or when you're able to turn around and look at it, it's like, oh, yeah, it was there the whole time. So I'm trying to think. I feel like this has been done in another, like, fictional world before. Not, like, I'm not saying this is repetitive. I'm just trying to think of, like, there's a comparison of...
I weirdly keep going back to the Weeping Angels on Doctor Who. Like, you never actually see them move, but, like, you blink and they have moved. And it's sort of like it changes your perception of them. Suddenly you realize that they are living creatures that can travel versus something that initially was just a statue and you kind of just walked past and didn't realize what it actually was.
Yeah, it also kind of reminds me of, oh, there's something, is it Inception? There's something that talks about, like, creating a, like, creating fake realities, and it's like...
That sounds like Inception.
It is, that does happen in Inception, but I'm trying to think of this specific circumstance, so I'm thinking it was that. It's, the, like, creating fake realities and how it's not like, you're not actually putting in every detail, you're just kind of putting in enough to make it feel real to someone, but, like, then when you actually, like, it doesn't necessarily hold up to, like, close inspection, so... I don't know. Anyway, it's crazy, but the point is, they remember him, like, completely. They're like, oh, yeah, of course, like, why did we forget him as soon as they see the guy? And So what's it going to take for that to happen with Styles?
Right. Well, and I'm also wondering how much of an effect does this have? Is this contained to their little bubble, or because they've remembered, other people will start remembering? Like, does it kind of reverse the effects of this person's existence disappearing? If their room has completely disappeared, will it start building itself back up again because somebody has remembered? And will that trigger, like, his family to start remembering him? Or is this absolutely contained to this ID card and now they have to look further into it to find more clues and maybe bring more of him back?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's like, because that information was in the library computer, you know? Like, does this mean they, like, when they scanned the card, it was there, you know? Like, and so it didn't just come up blank. So are they going to be able to, like, find, like, records of Styles? Like, obviously they don't even know his name to start with. But, like, are they going to be able to find some sort of official record or a photo? Like, I don't know, like... What?
Yeah. But this is cool, though, because I think they're going to be able to look for clues now regarding Styles' disappearance. And I think it's going to go back to Lydia's vision of that night that he was taken. And hopefully she and Corey can go into this other world and look around and maybe notice something that helps trigger their memory of him. And by going down that road, they'll be able to bring more and more back. And as more people remember, perhaps they can actually go and find him.
I don't know, Karen.
Yeah, there are a lot of unanswered questions. And I think we should jump into the biggest one of this episode, because I honestly don't want to talk about this because, first of all, it was really upsetting to me for some reason. But also, I just, like, I can't explain it. So basically, we find out that the sheriff has a wife, and I'm really not okay, and I really don't understand. Like, is this Claudia? I honestly don't remember if this is the same actress.
I don't think it's the same actress. I've tried to look her up, and I don't think it's the same actress.
Okay. So if she's new, if she's, maybe he got remarried, okay, which is fine, except we know that making somebody disappear doesn't alter reality. They just kind of cover up reality. So why would Styles disappearing mean that the sheriff got remarried? Logically, it makes sense. You know, if Styles didn't exist, then perhaps he found somebody else to, like, he was able to move on in a way that he couldn't when his son was around and they relied on each other and he was fine with it just being the two of them. But we know that the Ghost Riders don't alter reality in such a significant way. So why did they for the sheriff?
Maybe she's a part of it. Maybe she's a villain.
That would be interesting.
I don't, like, because that's the thing. They haven't really changed anything for anyone else. They haven't popped anything into existence, you know. They've just taken this thing away. So how come she's popped into existence?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unless it has something to do with their bond, the fact that the sheriff and Styles were so close that they needed to alter reality for him not to go snooping around or something, but that feels like a stretch. That feels like me trying to make the evidence fit the theory.
Yeah. And, you know, it could also be that he never existed, like, because he never married, like, Styles never existed because he never married Claudia, you know, that he married someone else, that it's not necessarily a second wife.
Yeah. It's so frustrating.
It was certainly the most shocking part of the episode.
Yeah, I got really angry.
I was just like, again, I was like, what? Like, it's really, you know, and has the whole, like, you know, the eating healthy thing, which makes it feel like it is a little bit of a replacement for Styles there, like, you know, mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, joking and giving him the sandwich and stuff, so... I don't know.
Yeah, I actually yelled at the television, those better not be curly fries, because I got really upset.
Yeah, and the fact that she's like, I want you around for a nice long time, and then gives him the unhealthy food, maybe she's a villain trying to kill him off because he's the one most likely to remember Styles.
That sounds awful. It also sounds like something Teen Wolf would do.
Sounds like I might be reaching a bit. You know, a villain trying to kill the sheriff with, like, fast food.
Yeah.
You know. So, I don't know. But it was certainly a shock. And, yeah, I'm sure, like, either, you know, more things are going to pop into existence and change due to the erasure of people, or she's something specifically connected to the villains to, you know, to fill in for the Ghost Rider, you know, to fill in for the fact that the sheriff is the biggest suspicion when it comes to Styles, like, or the biggest risk, you know, if they were taking Styles for a reason, you know, as opposed to just coincidence that guy's there.
Yeah. Also, we haven't seen Melissa yet, have we?
No, I was thinking about that. We have not seen Melissa this season at all yet. We did see Tank Wolf, you know, yell at Scott, or not yell at him, but kind of subtly be like, now, about trying to break into the locker.
He was super creepy looking, too.
You're just saying that now because you know that he's Tank Wolf.
No, I mean, I knew before, but, like, he just, the way that he smiled at him, the way that he stayed, like, so calm and cool, he just... It's, like, too perfect. He's too perfect looking, and that just sends up red flags.
I still think, and I'm going to say it again, given that there was no reveal in this episode, the article is published, it's up there, you can go and check it, but I still think Jeff was possibly not... I think we are not meant to know that he is yet the Tank Wolf, like, despite the fact that the showrunner has said so in an interview to us, or maybe... Did he know, like, I don't know, it feels weird that we know that this is what he is. Is that weird for you? Like, maybe that...
No, because I've known for so long, and I'm pretty sure, like, that wasn't insider info. Like, I read that somewhere else.
Because the recent press release is, like, he's playing Mr. Douglas, and then ages ago it was, like, Pete Plosnick is a Nazi werewolf, or, like, whatever. So, it's kind of strange. Like, are we meant to, like... Because he hasn't done anything that suspicious so far. I mean, a little bit, but not much. And so, I don't know, it's stressful just watching him hang around.
Be there without doing anything, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the final point in this episode was Lydia does some automatic writing. And she ends up writing the word mischief over and over again, and it comes out in the shape of Styles' name. And of course, this is where we get what the hell is a Styles. Mm-hmm. And this was really cool, but also very confusing, because why do you think she wrote the word mischief over and over again?
Oh my god, please, can that be Styles' real name? Like, some... Sorry. I don't know. But my
first, I don't think it is.
My first thought when they zoomed out, I was like, well, before I realized she was writing mischief, I thought she was writing some Slavic name, if you know
his
what I mean.
His name, yeah. I got really, like, excited.
And I was like, what? But then I was like, mischief. And I don't know, maybe Claudia Strelinski has an adorable sense of humor and was like, oh, my little son. And that's why he never wanted to use it, because he was too embarrassed. that his name
But people couldn't pronounce his name. Like, that was
I'm joking.
Thing too.
I know. But the fact that it wasn't his name, because I was ready. I was like, this is the moment. This is the name. It was not.
Yep.
Yeah, spoiler alert, it was not. So I have no idea, because I don't know if the Ghost Riders, like, if they... It doesn't... They don't feel like tricksters, you know? It's not just, like, mischief, like, ha-ha, jokes. Jokes, we're vanishing people.
Yeah.
So...
They don't look like a jokes kind of people.
No, I don't really understand why that word.
I have a couple of different theories. My one thought was like, okay, why is this word specifically the word that is associated with Styles in Lydia's mind? Because I feel like given their relationship, it could have been a whole host of other words. That being said, Styles is very mischievous. We know that on Mischief Night, he likes to prank Coach because that's Coach's birthday as well. So, like, there's a little connection there. He was taken over by the Nagitsune, Fox Spirits, you know, they're mischievous. So I see connections between Styles and the word mischief, but the fact that this is the word that she decided to write down, that she heard in her brain or whatever, it feels off. Like, I feel like there should have been something else, but maybe there will be a bigger connection later on and we'll all go, oh my God, that's why she wrote that. And also my other theory goes back to what Kristen was saying, is that, like, if Styles is able to manipulate this reality, maybe it's a clue as to, like, hey, he's causing some mischief. We need to pay attention to, like, some of the things that are going on here.
Yeah. I really don't know. The automatic writing thing was a little confusing, though.
Why?
Just, like, what they were doing. I didn't really follow that well. But again, it was a Deaton plan, so whatever. but at least they know that Styles is a something.
Yes. Yes, they do. So that's pretty cool, though. I mean, they've got his name now, and so hopefully they can look into that. I mean, I don't really know how they're going to jump to the next step, because what the hell is a Styles? Like, Styles is very unique to Styles. It's not like it could necessarily mean something else. It's not like somebody else has his name other than Stilinski, but they're not that close that I don't know if they can make that leap between it. So we'll just have to wait and find out.
Yeah, how does one even begin to start tracking someone down based on this?
Given that they've been completely erased, I still think they have to go back to the scene of Styles' disappearance, and hopefully they'll find a clue. Maybe that clue is the Jeep.
Oh, yeah, the Jeep. Where's the Jeep?
Roscoe. I mean, it should still be sitting in the parking lot.
Roscoe,
I don't know
to the
if...
rescue. You know, maybe he'll have a correct license and registration in the glove box.
Ooh. You that know. Would be cool.
And that could be that, like, because you know how Jeff said the discovery of the name was, like, going to be really understated? Like, it was just, like, at least he did to us at Comic-Con, like, to my table at Comic-Con. He was like, yeah, we will find out Styles' real name, and it's actually going to be a really casual moment. So maybe it'll literally be, like, flicking through the paperwork in the car or something like that.
Yeah. I would be into that.
Yeah.
I could do that.
It's not going to be, like, a big dramatic, like... Here lies whoever Stilinski, you know.
God, I hope not.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts on this episode. Obviously, we both really liked it. I think that this season so far, and I feel like I say this every season because you can, like, at least when I think back on each season, in my head, they're very distinct, and I kind of see, like, maybe this is weird. I don't know. I kind of see, like, different colors for each season and different, like...
No, it's not uncommon for a lot of shows to use, like, a certain lighting tone or a certain color.
Right.
For each season.
Yeah. And again, like, season six feels different in tone. The cinematography feels different. It feels like another step up for the show. It feels a little bit like a movie. And with everyone's acting so on point, like, it just, they've really stepped it up for this final season. And I know we're only two episodes in, but I am so excited to see what comes next.
I'm really curious to see, actually talking about, like, cinematography and stuff like that. In your interview, when you talked about with Jeff about Posey directing, that he got those shots from his production manager saying, from Posey's dailies, saying, finally someone is using this set from the angles that it's meant to be used for. Like, if you know what mm-hmm. I mean, about Posey. And I'm really curious to know what set that was and what, like, is going to be that much more creative or unusual about it. I really want to know what shot that he was referring to there. So all of those aspects, I feel like there's, like, going to be such a personal touch on the season with the people involved in it this season. Like, it just feels like everyone's trying really hard. I don't know, like, if that's...
Yeah.
That's not to say they were trying before, but, you know, like, it just feels like they're trying really hard.
Yeah, well, and I think... Because it's the last season, because everybody knows this now, like, they've been through so much together and on set that I think it's not that they weren't trying enough before, but they're trying even harder now because they know that this is their last hurrah and they know that this, they really want to make the most of it.
And this was not necessarily at this point known that it was the end. I don't know, maybe it was for the cast, but, you know, because we found out at
Comic-Con. I don't think it was.
We found out at Comic-Con. Most of the cast and crew only found out that they were finishing on 100 episodes, like, that week, like, or that day. And they were already shooting, the episodes, you know, for season six then. It was, a lot of it was already shot. So at this point, they didn't necessarily know that there was an end coming, which is an interesting, perspective to kind of take in terms of watching it. You know, watching the loose ends that might be tied up. And so the fact that they didn't necessarily know at this very second that it was the end makes me sort of even more impressed with the raise in tone and the loose ends, you know, being addressed, like Corey and, like, all of those things that we've mentioned. So whereas the back half, like 6B, will be done with the complete awareness of, you know, that it is the end. So that's going to be interesting to look out for.
Yeah, that's a good point. I completely agree. Mm. And the other thing that I'm really into this season is the fact that they're giving us all these puzzle pieces, but we don't know how to put them together yet. And it really makes you think, like, okay, is this a clue or is this a red herring? How do these pieces fit together? I know that this is important, but I can't figure out why it's important right now. And I'm just so into the fact that it feels like such an elevated story already. And I can't wait to just keep getting more information and trying to keep it all straight in my head and, like, put it together. And when we finally get that aha moment, I think it's going to really pay off.
Mm. Yeah. Do we have any further news at this point about what is coming?
Nope, nothing else.
Mm. Yeah, so that's this episode. At this point, so at the time that we're watching this, it's actually not to be that guy, but it's actually a little in advance of the air date, and so we were able to record this in advance. But that means that we don't have much news or even the episode title for episode three. Perhaps when episode two airs, we will have the episode for... episode title for episode three. So right now we're watching this at the point where we know nothing coming. So have you got any outlandish theories about what might be next?
Oh my gosh. Man, I think what we're going to see now is trying to figure out what the hell is the Styles. And I think a lot of that is going to end up coming down on Lydia. And I mean, I think Scott is obviously going to be an important part of that too, but I just think that given Lydia's powers, hopefully she will find the next clue that will continuously lead them in that direction. Also, I really feel like we've got to see Styles again soon. We know we're going to get footage of him from the way station. And Peter's there too. So I'm really hoping we'll get that in episode 3. And if not, maybe 4. Because I feel like they can't hold that from us too long.
Yeah.
I just hope that, like, he's still out there.
Yeah. Oh my god. I feel so insecure about, like, how, like, I feel like they can't really reveal much about whether Dylan will be involved in the very end of the show unless, you know, until we know the end to this mystery, like, until we know if he survives or not, which, I mean, I hope that he will, but I feel really nervous about, like, whether he will be involved in the end of the show or not, or whether he has, like, other things to do, or whether he's not well enough, if you know what I mean. He's certainly been working on other things since then, like, you know, and...
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, because honestly, and this is one of the reasons why I asked Jeff, like, okay, how high are the stakes, and, like, do we really have to worry, because you're gonna want to end these characters in a good place, and he said, yeah, the stakes are still high, but also we want to make sure that we accomplish the things that we want to accomplish. I feel pretty secure about Styles. I don't know how much he's going to end up being in the season, but I think he's going to end up in a good place for a lot of different reasons. They're really pushing this Lydia and Styles thing. I don't think that they would take that away from the fans. Styles is also a fan favorite character. If they kill him off in the final season or something, or if they make his ending really tragic, like he just continues to, like, stay gone, people are going to be really upset.
Yes. But even having him end, like, at the, say, at the end of this arc, you know, like, shooting for 6A, like, if he doesn't, you know, if he doesn't get out of this and then return to shoot for the final arc in 6B and, like, be there at the very end of the day, like, in the finale, I don't know how people are going to react to that. And I can't really see any reason why he wouldn't be unless... Like, unless Dylan really didn't want to be involved with the show, or, like, really didn't have time to, and it's like, but the show is ending, like, it's sort of, like, now or never, like, and he presumably has big enough pull to be like, I'm not gonna do that other thing until I just have to finish this thing that I need to finish, and then I will be an Oscar-winning movie star, you know, like, just, you know, so I hope that is gonna happen, like...
Yeah, again, I feel pretty good about it because, well, for one, again, this isn't, like, secret information. It's in that interview I did with Jeff. They still need to shoot scenes for episode 10, which I think is because of Dylan's schedule. So I have a feeling that maybe he's, you know, coming back for episode 10. I don't know how much he's going to be involved in 6B. Right now he's filming for American Assassin, and he's doing that over in London. Mm-hmm. Maze Runner The Death Cure picks back up again in February, so there may be time for him to squeeze in this final arc of Teen Wolf. I think it might be a little bit difficult, but I also think, like, Posey's, like, his best friend, and he loves this show.
Like, that's the thing. It shouldn't be squeezing it in. It should be, like, I don't want to say, like, oh, he should do this, like, you know, like, whatever. But, like, in this position, with this show that is ending, and with this show that has made him so, like, transcendently successful, where he has got to show off this talent that is so natural, that has made, like, people pay attention to him for all sorts of projects that he, you know, this isn't really the kind of show that usually gets people all sorts of projects, but because of his own talent and, you know, just the reel that they would have been able to create for him, like, you know, just the, you know, the showreel of, like, this is what he can do based on this show that he was cast on as no experience, as an unknown, that you would want to come back and be like, okay, I'm going to put my effort into finishing this, you know, like, you would hope that would happen.
The only reason why I said squeeze in is because obviously he does have other projects, but I genuinely, like, I don't know Dylan.
No.
Like, straight up, we have really no connection with him at all.
Yeah.
And it's been a while since I've been able to talk to him at any of the conventions because he is so busy and he doesn't always get to go to the panels. But, I mean, I feel like he has a soft spot in his heart for the show, and he's gonna try to make sure that this character that he's had for 6 or 7 years is going to get the proper ending. And I think everyone is really pulling to make sure that season 6 is going to be the best that it can be. So again, I feel pretty secure, and I feel like maybe he won't have a huge, huge presence in the back half of season 6, but I think he's going to be there. And I think that final moment is going to be a good one for most everybody. I mean, I can't guarantee like everybody's gonna survive, but I think the main ones are gonna stick around, and hopefully they're all gonna be smiling as they walk off into the sunset.
Yeah, you know, just you know, wait for Jeff and that killing main characters nonsense that he is spouting. So
yeah, that was cruel, and he knew it.
That.
Yeah. But that was it for this episode, and yeah, we'll catch you guys next week, I suppose.
Yeah. So this is going to run through without a break, presumably. Like, well, there might be a break for Christmas, but you know, aside from that,
yeah.
We're going to keep going, and yeah, then it's going to be over, and you'll just have to I don't know, listen to this podcast from the start and rewatch Teen Wolf again or something like that. alternately, you can listen to our other podcast, Not About the Weather, but that's not about Teen Wolf at all. So if you want to keep hanging out in Teen Wolf land, you can just go back to the beginning and listen to these 135 episodes again. Yeah, 150 it'll be, or so by the more than 150 by the time that we finish this season. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yep.
Wow. All right, well, that's it. Hope you enjoy it. Go and reach out to us on Twitter, you know, Tumblr, email us, let us know, you know, how you're feeling about the show. You can leave us a review on iTunes if you'd like, as well. You can subscribe to this on iTunes so you know when a new episode comes out. You can also check out our hub website, natwpodcast.com, to see more about the other project that we're doing as part of this podcasting family. So that will be something that we're sort of doing hand in hand with this show, and then carrying on once Teen Wolf stops. But yeah, you can do all of those things. Obviously, we don't have too much feedback yet because not everyone has seen the episode yet. From moving from here on out, as the episodes start to come out, we'll be able to talk more with people and answer questions on air and get some feedback. So yeah. That will be good, I hope. I'm really curious to see how a lot of this is received, Karen. Like, I really...
Yeah,
me too. I'm waiting. I'm just, like, sitting here being like, this is going to be... It's weird, like, not to have it, like, the live, like, everyone reacting at the same time. But it's also interesting because everything that we've spoken about here is not really influenced by any, like, oh, I saw a fan theory. You know, like, this is all very pure, these thoughts, yes. I suppose. So that's also kind of fun. All right, we'll let you go now. So farewell until next week. I'm Natalie, and that's Karen, and this is Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Hi.
Hi. I think that's working.
Cool.
Is that automatically starting to record? Yes, it is. Okay, say some words. Sing for me.
I'm not going to sing for you, no matter how many times you ask me.
Why don't you like to sing? I sing all the time.
Yes, but you are a good singer. I am not.
I'm not a good singer.
Yes, you are.
That's really stretching there. okay.